Hello, and thank you for joining us for this special episode of MedCast live from the Revolutionizing Atopic Dermatitis 2023 meeting in Washington, D.C. My name is Dr. Raj Chovatiya, Assistant Professor of Dermatology and Director of the Center for Eczema and Itch at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. Forget about me, because joining me today is a very big superstar guest, Dr. Lawrence Eichenfeld, who's going to be talking to us all about ruxolitinib cream in the treatment of vitiligo. For those of you that don't know, Dr. Eichenfeld is the Chief of Pediatric and Adolescent Dermatology for Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego, as well as a Professor of Dermatology and Pediatrics and Vice Chair of the Department of Dermatology at the UC San Diego School of Medicine. A mouthful. Thanks so much for joining us today, Larry.
My pleasure.
So, you know, one of the big questions that I feel like a lot of folks have out there is, what is the general approach to vitiligo in the younger age population? And, you know, we now have some potential options for that 12 and up group, but what are some of the considerations you're taking when you're seeing your patients?
So I'd say, first of all, that it's dynamically changing, right? We never had any drug approved specifically for vitiligo, and with the introduction of ruxolitinib, that both moves us in the on-label, you know, 12-year-olds plus, which is a significant amount of vitiligo, and it's percolating down, I think, to patients and families even before they come to see me, where they've sort of heard that things are happening. And I do think that in the world of pediatric dermatology, there's more cognition about vitiligo. Vitiligo is incredibly common. Mm-hmm. We see vitiligo, you know, starting, basically even preschool kids. And then, of course, we have our different data points at which we see their disease is presenting. We have subsegmental vitiligo, some, you know, non-segmental, some ascending very rapidly, and some fairly localized. We know, as the data shows, although the data is still limited in adolescents and children, how impactful vitiligo can be.
Sure. You know,
depending upon its location and total body surface area, it's been a big deal. Historically, I think the approach has been to be supportive but not necessarily aggressive with treatment. And certainly vitiligo and alopecia areata sit together as the next inflammatory diseases after first psoriasis and then atopic dermatitis, where, you know, movement in technology and pharmaceutical development for the disease helps us to get better outcomes and then change the psychology.
Right.
So ruxolitinib introduction certainly has changed therapy in adolescents 12 plus. Very hard to get off label right now. We look forward to the further studies that are done with that. But I still think also there's no standard approach to either evaluation of vitiligo when you see it. Standardly, people aren't quantifying the vitiligo. I'm a big believer. I've been a pusher, so to speak, in atopic dermatitis, that the utility of documenting BSA involvement, and part of my new spiel is that, and that's true for vitiligo and alopecia areata as well. If you quantify that, it's important as something to follow. Mainstay of therapy traditionally for children and teens has been topical corticosteroids or the non-steroids, with the more delicate skin areas, you know, a facial being treated with non-steroids. But even that has been a struggle historically in peds, because you have the difficulty of getting a higher strength tacrolimus if someone was 14 years or 13 years of age, because of the, you know, officially it's not indicated, and you want the more potent formulation, which can be used safely in most individuals. So ruxolitinib has been a game changer. I think that most, even rank and file pediatric dermatologists who are really specialists in the disease, they know the disease. The concept of adding light as much as they can isn't there yet.
Yeah.
Okay. And certainly, there, you know, major centers have UVB boxes, and people who come in there to avail themselves of that, usually with topical non-steroids as well, or intermittent steroids, but most don't. And even, you know, we're hitting the time of year when we're taping this, you know, we're getting more natural light,
right,
and people can get their exposure in addition, which of course is tricky in kids, because unless you sun protect the other areas, you end up differentiating the vitiligo more. Wand wand units or something that are unofficially have sort of changed what people were doing. So for people who don't know, there's used to be that we had our big UVB boxes and leftover hand units from the old days, and very hard to get home UVB boxes for vitiligo in my experience. But now there are these hand units that are essentially sort of LED equivalent of light delivery, which there are several on Amazon. Yeah. And it's a little tricky when you advise them, not necessarily prescribe them, because the way in which they, you know, each unit has its own, here's what we think the starting level will be, and you're trying to basically go to a minimal erythematous dose without being in control like the light boxes.
I mean, very, very obviously great point about, I think, that we oftentimes forget that, you know, light is an important part of this with our traditional approach to therapy. And that kind of makes me transition to, you know, ruxolitinib cream is kind of the first on-label approved option that we've had for repigmenting vitiligo. Where does it kind of enter your discussion with families when you see kiddos coming on in that sort of fit that 12 and up age group and it might be an appropriate choice?
So in real life, it's part of the discussion at any age. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily I can get it for them, mm-hmm. you know, but I said, look, we never had an approved drug. Here's our approved drug. It's actually, I've had incredible successes with vitiligo. Yeah. You know, facial vitiligo has responded incredibly well. I have some patients where they have to pick and choose where they're going to use it because mm-hmm. they hit the limit of body right. surface area, and we put priorities on that. So it's part of the discussion on every patient. Now, is it first line? Say I have a 14-year-old with significant vitiligo on the face. Yes, if I can get it, absolutely, I'll do it. I'll do it first line because I do think that the risk benefit. Without much risk, right. an incredible benefit. Its relative potency, then the tolerance data right. as well makes me go for it. Now, in some cases, access is an issue, but I've actually been pretty successful. So I like that first line. Less than 12, I say, I let them know there's this drug. It's approved 12 plus. It's the first approved drug we've had for vitiligo. You know, you can try to get it off label, but I'll tell you, pretty much it's like talk to the hand. That's you know, right. you're not gonna. And actually, but they're doing further studies.
Yeah, I was going to say, where are we headed as far as kind of the under 12 population and thinking about sort of getting them on the train here?
Yeah. So the answer is that, you know, right now, I think ruxolitinib becomes part of the discussion. But part of the discussion is also way more than just holding hands and go, okay, well, you know, this is what, you know, life has dealt you. We'll try to be careful, which was for many years for significant vitiligo, that's what you did, right. unless it was bad enough to come in for UVB therapy with all the issues for that. So now we're much more positive. In fact, I also tell them about some of the initiatives like the, you know, that we're working on this, you know, guidelines for pediatric and young adult vitiligo. I said, you know, that shows you we're getting it together, yeah. looking for best practices. And then we generally have to be reassuring about other autoimmune diseases because families come in with those concerns. What other issues do we face? But we're also trying to find that, you know, what it is we get from expectation from therapy. You know, letting them know that, hey, we'll probably do better on the central body and face than we are on hands and feet, but we're going to get there over time probably. And that's where I think we're at now. Now, in the future, how we may look at systemic therapies, right? Whether it be oral JAKs mm-hmm. or for kids and teens, we'd love to leapfrog that into biologic therapies. Yeah. And I'm very pro, like when companies are interested in developing stuff, I say, can you get a biological vitiligo? Would that even work? You know, I really think yes, you know, for significant vitiligo, because if you need years or a lifetime sure. of therapy, biologic might be more fun to do than a JAK.
Very, very exciting. And I think that we're headed in a lot of cool directions for an age group that oftentimes we tend to forget about. But remember, you know, vitiligo, equal opportunity, all ages affected, and, you know, almost half of cases can occur before 20. So really sort of important for us to think about. With all that said, thank you so much for the discussion today, Dr. Eichenfeld, and thank you to everybody who's tuned in to this episode of MedCast from HCP Live. If you enjoyed this discussion on ruxolitinib cream and vitiligo, there are so many other expert insights and resources on hcplive.com. You can register for daily newsletter updates, social media, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it, for more rad content and MedCast episodes. Thanks so much again.